Blog Talk Radio.
Plain talking.
Take us so far.
Broken down cars.
Like strung out old stars.
Plain talking.
Served us so well.
We traveled through hell.
Know how we fell.
Welcome to the World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio. We thank them for making us the featured host here on the Blog Talk Radio network. And today we're actually doing a special World of Ink episode. So instead of having the Writing Mama show today, myself, Virginia Escrenier, and Marcia Casper Cook have teamed up today to do a show together.
Well, they know it's not my music, so they know it's not my music.
I know, like, it feels like it's going longer than normal.
I know. I think it is speed up a little. I know.
Yeah. But today we do have a special World of Ink where you and I are here today. But before we get into our show and everything today, we do want to let our listeners know that the World of Ink Network, what we do is we bring shows each week to our listeners on topics from books, writing, author interviews, self-help, and obviously a lot of other topics as well. And then we also would like to share with you some of our upcoming shows that are happening as well in the World of Ink Network. And I don't know if you noticed, Marcia, or not, but Wednesday I will actually be doing the What If Success show. I have author Tom Garrison joining me.
Oh, that's good. Did you just put it up? I didn't see it. Oh, okay.
It was up this week. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I was waiting for Tom to confirm what time, so that's the reason why I didn't get up as soon as it should have been. But anyways, we're going to be talking about guerrilla marketing. So anybody who's listening to today's show, or if you're a small business, a small publisher, you know, indie press, it's definitely a show you're going to want to tune into, because we're going to be talking about marketing strategies, obviously known as the guerrilla marketing strategies. And pretty much anybody who has online or a small business or is an indie author, these tips you can really use, especially when you're competing against some of the bigger publishers out there or businesses out there that tend to have, obviously, bigger marketing budgets to work with. So that will be a really fun show. I've actually seen Tom give the presentation in a writer's workshop before. So a lot of really good information in it.
It is good. I actually have a book that I got from about guerrilla marketing. It's good. You know, that's all we have. That's all we do lately, and that's one of the things that everybody would like to do more successfully.
Yeah, so that will be Wednesday, and that will be at 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, that's good. And,
then,
Irene,
go ahead.
The show Friday?
Yeah.
Doesn't Irene have a show?
Yes, we have the Empowerment Show. It will be the first Empowerment Show with Irene Rose. And that is Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And she'll be talking about the importance of empowering your teens and building the communication bridge between, obviously, the adult to the teenager, be it if you're a guardian, a parent, teacher, whatever. And she'll also be talking about some of the cultural demands that are on our adolescent boys and girls that weren't as prevalent when we were growing up, that they are dealing with now, obviously, because of the way we have all the social media and basically online world, that is stuff that a lot of us didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
So the way they communicate is so different from how a lot of us grew up with communication. So she'll be talking about that, how to develop those relationships with the teenagers.
And then Bennett has a show on, we hope he's well. He was ill, but he'll be back on Saturday night with his show, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's
yes.
booked.
Yeah, he's booked up, and that's at 9 p.m. Eastern, and he has that. It's still under the name In Another Anything Goes. We've been talking with Bennett Pomerant, so that show name may change in the future, but it will still be under the Another Anything Goes title for this coming Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And then, do you have a show Monday, next Monday?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Monday is a Stories for Children show. My gosh, I know I have like show crazy. So Monday I will be on next week with the Stories for Children show. That's once a month at the end of the month, and we will be talking about summer programs to keep children engaged and learning throughout the summer. I actually have an... Unfortunately, I'm sorry, I don't have my notes in front of me. But the YMCA contacted me, and they have really gotten involved with that whole idea of keeping kids involved and learning throughout the summer, especially with, like, literacy.
What time is it? What time?
That show will be at 6 p.m. Eastern time, and we will actually have a spokesperson from the Y on the show for about 30 minutes to talk about some of the programs they have going on. I know when I was a kid, I didn't even think about this until they contacted me, but I remember I used to go to the YMCA during the summer and do youth programs at the Y, and I think we've all kind of forgot that there are things like that available. Like, we have rec centers. We don't have YMCAs where I live, but we do have rec centers, city rec centers, that do that. And I'm like, wow, I totally forgot about doing that with my kids. So it'll be a good show, because I think sometimes we forget what's available in our neighborhoods that can benefit our children.
There are a lot of things. I'm going to be getting into that a lot with my, I have a new blog, you know, which I said I have like 10 blogs out of 11, I think. I don't know. I just keep saying I'm cutting blogs and then I start another one. But it's called Nick and Natalie's Children's Book Club. And any of the authors that have children's books, they're free to let me know. Just send me your cover and I will put you out there, you know, with your link to the book, because I think which you'll find out today, we need as much help for children's authors, because as you know, I do a lot of shows that are, you know, romance writers, and that's kind of taken over a lot, so we're trying to focus on children. So I started that, and it's, you know, if you just send me your cover, and if you have a few covers, I'll be happy to put those on, and we're going to start doing other things, but I'm working on trying to be more, you know, with the times, with healthy foods and things like that, that we've not really concentrated on, that will help kids in the long run for as they grow up and be adults. So that's one of the things I'm doing. So that's Nick and Natalie's Children's Book Club. So that should be fun. I'm enjoying that. And let's see. Oh, I have a show next Tuesday night. I do have a romance show. I've not had one in a while. And we're having Sandy Sullivan, who... she's the owner of Secret Cravings, and she's got tons of authors, and it's not only a romance, it's a thriller, and she's actually, I reminded her, she was actually one of the first guests that I did for my romance shows. Do you remember when I started that, like 3 years ago or something? Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years ago, I had one romance show, I never had any, and then we had them a lot, but she was on that show, but now she has really done well as a publisher. She has lots of authors, and we've had a lot of them on. Melissa Kier will be on, and Michelle Prince, she's with them, and she has a lot of authors, Sandy. So it's going to be really interesting, and we'll be taking calls and hopefully tweeting. And so that should be really fun.
Sounds like it.
And Bennett wants to be on the show, and he might be on the show. So depending on how he feels, he can join us.
Right.
All right, so that's about all I have to say. I have a lot of shows coming up, and you do too.
Okay.
And so they can just go on to our network, World of Ink, or Michigan Avenue, and find out what shows.
Yeah, worldofinknetwork.com, and that links off to the Michigan Avenue Media site or vice versa.
Right.
And then, of course, we always have our worldofinknetwork.blogspot.com that you can follow what things we have going on. Plus, we do post other things besides our shows, like articles and interviews with authors. And
we do a lot. I just
put
something
of
Emma's up, so we'll talk later about that. Yeah, I mean, we do a lot because, you know, you just can't keep posting, you know, buy me, review me. You can't keep doing that. So, and we'll be talking about that probably today, too, because, you know, we're trying to move a little in different directions, you and I, and I think we're, you know, just starting some new programs because we need, you know, you need to do new things. And so we have a great guest today.
Yes, we do.
And we are lucky to get her back, Emma Dryden, who is unbelievable. We have so much. You have a lot going on, Emma. So, Emma, you can probably tell everybody exactly what you do because you have really increased what you do since the last time. You do a lot of things.
Sure. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Great to be back here. I was just looking at my records, and on my website, I have the link to our previous conversation, which was 2011.
Was it really?
Was
Yeah, it was. I know we're still doing shows. All these years. I know. Yes.
So,
I think we're one of the old time shows.
Yeah, exactly. It's great to be back, and it sounds like you two are just keeping the airwaves hopping, which is very exciting with all sorts of books. And I'm delighted that you're focusing a little bit more on children's books.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm happy to kind of represent in that respect.
Yes, and you are a good representative. Great one.
Well, thank you. You know, I think when we spoke last, I had started my own company, Dryden Books, and it was just about a year old at that point, or maybe a little more. And so now I'm practically 5 years in and going strong, I'm happy to say. And look, I'm doing an enormous amount of diverse work with authors, illustrators, publishers, agents, people who are self-publishing, hybrid authors, people who just want helpful, accurate information about the children's book industry, what's going on out there, kind of best practices, quote-unquote, just to talk about, you know, do I need an agent, and if so, how do I get one, what kind of conferences are out there, what kind of support system is out there for writers of children's books. And when I say children's books, I'm really talking about all ages, from, you know, board books and infant books up through young adult and even new adult. You know,
That's a huge range. That really is a huge range.
It's a huge range, and it is the range of the children's book market. And that's how certainly I was trained in this business. I worked at Random House for a few years and worked at Macmillan, and then Macmillan was bought by Simon & Schuster. So I have worked at some of the big six or the big five or whatever they're called now. That's my background, being an editor and then a publisher. Now as a freelance consultant, that is still the range that I am interested in and that I have to be interested in because that is the range of the children's marketplace. So,
there absolutely really isn't a lot of things going on. There is a lot of things going on, but there's no, you know, that's why we're trying to help now because I think a lot of the children's author that Virginia had the magazine and she literally, we had hundreds and hundreds of people with lists and a lot of them are not doing this anymore and that's what's very sad. They've stopped.
I had a magazine.
In editing or just talking about the children's book industry?
The writing. When I was running Stories for Children magazine, I used to get hundreds of submissions a month. So it was an online magazine similar to kind of like Highlights or the Bug magazines. But what we did, because since we're online, is I would also have authors like Brandon Mull and James Dashner and Rick Walton, Kevin Scott Collier, you know, some of the big names that are out there in both as illustrators and authors and children's work for an interview each month in the magazine as well. So the kids and the parents and the librarians and teachers could read more about authors they liked.
Sure.
And it was very, very popular, but when I closed the magazine, it's been about 3 years now since I shut the magazine down because it just took so much work to run the dang thing. A lot of the authors and illustrators I worked with, you know, some of them are still out there, and they're just, you know, on a very small scale. But there was a lot that has disappeared, and I was really sad to see that happen. Same with, you know, a lot of the published authors, too. Yeah. And I know it's tough.
That is too bad. Yeah, because I think, you know, even though our industry has been in some upheaval over the past few years, no question about that, and I've spoken at length on that subject at many different venues, but even with that, there are still, I think, opportunities for authors and illustrators to be working. You know, and this is where I think the marketplace, on the one hand, yes, it is hard to secure an agent and it's hard to secure a publisher, but on the other hand, there are a lot more choices than there were about how authors and illustrators can get their work seen and worked on and published.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. That, I mean, there was, like, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, the markets were not open like this, and the e-books were not really that prevalent. When we started doing shows, even, we had people on saying, oh, the e-books will be popular, but they got really popular in, like, a very fast.
Yeah, they are. You know, e-books, I think, are here to stay, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there is a way to publish directly into e-book and directly into digital. There are lots of interesting platforms for children's apps and story apps and that sort of thing. I mean, all of these opportunities, you know, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of research. I think the risk of anything digital is that authors and illustrators sometimes err on the side of being too impatient and just sort of throwing it up there because the digital space is easy to put things into. And that's where I caution authors and illustrators to say, yes, there are these opportunities, but you don't want to put anything out there that isn't really professionally presented and this is edited, designed, worked on hard. So that once your name is on it, you can go out there with your head held high have material published in different formats. And I think so ultimately, yes, there are some great new choices for people. It's just going to be a learning curve to many
people. One of the things which I found is, you know, a lot of the smaller publishers, the one thing that they don't do for the children's authors is they go, a lot of them say, like, okay, fine, we'll take your book as an e-book. And if you make a lot of money with the e-book, then we'll make it into a paperback, which I think is totally the wrong way because children still, it's the paperback market is still there for children, and it should be in a paperback first, I think even, because a lot of times an author will not sell e-books for children, and maybe they can sell e-books on another type of, you know, format, but children's books, the paperback, I still think it's important, and I think the parents buy a lot of paperback.
Well, yeah, I mean, and now we have to differentiate between picture books and that market and middle grade and YA, which is a completely different market.
Yes, it is.
Because,
you
know, I can't speak for all small presses, and, you know, I don't know how they have fashioned
I've seen this. I've seen this, and I'm back on my own because of what I saw. They did not, they just, it's not the same as every other market. A children's market, you can't just say you're going to be a children's publisher. It's very different.
Right. It is very different, and I think where those houses are not being far-sighted enough is a lot of picture book authors particularly, but also middle grade authors and any authors really, they need often those hard copies, whether they're hardcover or paperback, but printed copies because they're going into the school so much and they're going into libraries and they're doing those visits with kids where there's opportunities for books to be sold, and you can't do that easily with e-books. I think, too, the e-book market, while a lot of publishers are also simultaneously pubbing in print edition and an e-book edition, it's not been proven yet that e-books for picture books have lodged into the marketplace. They're not quite there yet. You know, so publishers have picture books available as e-books, but they're not selling, and it's not surprising. When you get into YA, that's a bit of a different story. Where, you know, you have your readers, your YA readers who are purchasing books for themselves, and often they're going to download them right onto their phone. So I think for any, and what you're talking about, I think, is very important, these kind of startup companies who think they can leap into children's book publishing, there are a lot of factors that have to be paid attention to that we can completely ignore if we're talking about books for adults?
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, how authors use books in classrooms, how teachers use books, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, this is why I'm of the mind that print's not really going anywhere for our business. Print is now, though, not the only way of getting books published. But I do generally agree that for every digital, there should probably be a print of some sort.
I think so. You know, I know you wanted to talk about a few things that we never really do talk about as much. You wanted to talk about the query letters and things like that, and I think we should, because you are the best person to talk about that, because you received thousands and thousands of them, and you know what this is like, and it's the hardest thing to write.
Sure, You know, query letters are kind of an art form, and, you know, you don't have to look too far online now to find great examples of query letters that worked and query letters that didn't work. Agents are sharing these kinds of things, which is very nice. Authors are posting often on their websites or blogs sort of examples of query letters that worked for them to secure their agent, that kind of thing. But I'll tell you, you know, the query letter, it's important. It's important. And it's really kind of a one-page snapshot of who you are, what your book's about, and why should anyone care. That's really what it's about. You know, an editor in a house needs to prepare a document for their sales force that's basically like a query letter. It's about the author, about the book, and why should you care. You know, and the query letter requires a creative head but also a business head. And that's sometimes where authors stumble, where there's too much kind of trying to be clever and creative and clever, whereas sometimes it's just very important to be very direct, not too clever. The query letter should not be in the voice of the main character, that kind of thing. It's a business transaction that authors and illustrators are entering into. So it's really formed after a business letter where the first paragraph really should sort of acknowledge the agent and whom you're contacting, kind of show that you've done your homework and kind of cite something about that agent or agency that appeals to you. For example, if you follow them on Twitter, if you know some of the authors they represent, if you know some of the books they represent, you kind of want to make that connection as a reason why you're contacting them. And then the next paragraph really should be about your book. And this is the trick of figuring out what the heck my book is about and how can I state that in maybe five sentences. And this is a big challenge. And authors sometimes send out query letters before they actually know what their book's about.
Sometimes it doesn't turn out the way they think it's going to turn out. And so, you know, I was an agent, and I do screenwriting and things like that, and I always said finish it because it may turn out differently than you think.
Yeah. Oh, I can't emphasize that enough, and I'm so, so glad you said that. I will not work on projects unless they're complete, usually.
Yeah, that's good.
I'll have consultancies with people, but I won't actually work on a manuscript. But I can't agree with you enough that you should not be querying anybody until you've completed not just a draft of your manuscript, but until you've revised your draft several times. You know, the beginning of a novel will change based on the end.
Yeah.
And until you've written the end and until you know where this story is actually going, you can't write a strong beginning. I really believe that, and I've seen it over and over.
Yeah.
So you're quite right. You know, you can practice writing query letters, but until you have a manuscript, you can't write a synopsis. And if you can't write a synopsis of the book, then you can't write that paragraph about the book for your query letter. You know, so and then too, in the query letter towards the end, you want to kind of talk about what makes you an authority on the subject, if that's plausible, you know, if that's relevant, or just what your affiliations are, if you're a member of critique groups, of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, you know, the, whatever, kind of anything that's pertinent to your writing would be important to cite. And just a very polite thank you for your time. I look forward to hearing from you. And then, above all, sort of follow the agent's query letter guidelines. And every agent has their own guidelines as to how they want queries to be formatted and how they want samples to be formatted. And I'll tell you honestly, agents who get queries that don't sort of follow those submission guidelines, they won't look at them. And I don't blame them. I do the same. If I get queries that don't follow very specific submission guidelines, which are accessible all over the Internet, you know, everybody's too busy.
You know, that's right. You know, I get calls a lot because I think people do know that I'll talk to them.
Yeah.
So they call me. So one, I just had a call the other day, and they go, he says, he's got this perfect book about stress, and, you know, because I live in Chicago, they think that I know Oprah, okay? And so I said, you know, Oprah says, gets so many things. He says, but this is different. They all say, this is different. I go, I just don't do this anymore. He says, well, if you don't think Oprah, I said, I didn't say anything. If you don't think Oprah, then I think I'll call Dr. Oz. I'm going like, okay, fine. You know, because that's what they say. They make a book up, and they oh, it's stress, it's whatever, it's about children, and Oprah likes this, Dr. Oz likes this, and that's how they think that their book is going to get sold.
No,
it's not happening.
No, it's not, and you're quite right. You know, I would advise people, you don't want to kill people's dreams by any means.
I know, I hate to say that, but I know that they're not, I'm not going to call up Oprah and say, hello, I got the best book for you.
No, of course not. Of course not. And
not that
you know,
I didn't try
very,
it, because
very,
I had a book, my Sala book on the Holocaust, I had a book, and we did hand deliver it to her. We did. This is years ago. And, you know, she said, thank you. Yeah, and she didn't, and she knew, I knew the person that gave it to her, and she didn't want to read it, and it didn't matter who I was. So, I mean, I tried.
Right.
You know, I'm just like everybody else. This was years ago, you know, and now I know better. I mean, I did it myself. I figured, well, all right, fine, I'll do it. Try it. Everybody else wants to try it, and it doesn't work.
Right.
Well, doesn't matter
who you are. And it's decent that you have a story like that that you're willing to share, because that's pretty typical.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to annoy people.
Right.
And I think there are plenty of other ways to get your work noticed.
Right.
You know, a lot of, I have found over the years that the people who kind of push and push on kind of get my book on Oprah, that kind of thing, when they push so hard on that, it's often the case that they are not masters of their craft.
Right, right.
And, you know, once you start reading the work, it's not well-crafted enough to publish, let alone to get on Oprah.
Right.
And, you know, I'm generalizing, but it's you know, it's really asking authors and illustrators to sort of take a realistic step back and just be really, really confident about your craft before you start sort of, you know, assuming you're going to be interviewed all over the place. Some of the stepping stones are missed along the way. You know, one big change from when we last spoke is that I've been doing a lot more teaching of craft. And this is something that I'm just personally very interested in and excited by. But I'm also seeing a huge need in the marketplace for really, you know, solid guiding of authors, particularly on their craft, on voice, on world building, on revision methods, on, you know, dialogue, really drilling down and taking time. And so a lot of the workshops and conferences that I do on craft are 4, 5, 6, 7 days, where there's writing time and we come back and we meet again and we revise and that kind of thing. And I'm finding that this people are clamoring for this. Because, you know, we just all need that, particularly in this marketplace. It's so competitive. What you can have control over is how well you write and how well you know how to write, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said all that, because as I've been listening to you talking about all this, you know, that was the first thing that goes strong, because I teach a very basic writing course through Dixie State University out here in Southern Utah, and you know, I focus, it's an 11-day class, so it's 1 day a week for 2 hours, So it's basically 22 hours, right, max? I'm like trying to do math in my head.
Yeah.
I'm tired. That I spend. Yeah, so basically, you know, like just basically think of, you know, if you're locked in a room 24 hours with me, right, talking crash. And I start from, like, the
uh-huh.
beginning of, like, what it means to actually be an author and what it takes to
right.
to even get your foot, you know, to even not get your foot in the door as being published, just get your foot in the door of taking it seriously. That it,
yeah.
If you really want to see your work published, you can't look at it as, like, a hobby, you know, that you do just every so
yeah.
often. You know, that it is a business. You have to run it like a business. And that's the first day of class with me, and I usually lose about 25% of the students because they freak out, like, oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, I just
yeah.
I hammer it down. And I love what you're saying about, you know, people who get it in their head about, you know, oh, I'm writing this book because this is what Dr. Oz or Oprah or whoever, you
right,
know,
right.
is going to love my book, you know, be whatever it is.
Right.
And so, or they write to the trend because, you know, everybody loved the Twilight series, so I'm going to write about vampires and werewolves
right.
and love stories and sagas.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and, or like when Harry Potter came out, everybody was writing wizard books. I'm going, if you're writing to what's
sure.
happening now,
right.
good
yeah.
luck, because
yep.
it's
yep.
happened. It's already happened.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And that's the thing. They're writing to make money, and that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth. I always ask mm-hmm. my class, how many of you are here to write to make money as an author? And, like,
mm-hmm.
usually 50% of the hands go up, right? And I look at them, I'm like, you either need to leave this class now or come back next week with a different attitude, because I'm telling you
right
now, the chances of you being in that top A-list, you know, New York
yeah.
best-selling author lineup is, like, 1%. And everybody who's
mm-hmm.
in it writes because they love writing, not because they wanted to make money. That was
yeah,
just
whoever
a
said
bonus.
That writers made a lot of money. That one
yeah,
got
right.
my
right.
I've never known
yes.
writers make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
some of the New York Times best-selling authors, they can't stop writing because they still need to pay the bills.
Exactly.
You know, so,
yeah.
But that's quite right. I mean, everything else we have no control over whatsoever, but how well we write and how well we present ourselves through our writing is what we do have control over, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of practice and a lot of process. And this is where, particularly in this kind of age of instant gratification, everything is
yeah.
instant, this is an attitude that's prevailing, I'm afraid, with many people of, oh, I can do this, and I'll do it fast, and we'll get it done fast, and that's not really working.
I'm so glad you're saying that, because, you know, I have said many times, I'm a very fast-paced person. I am. I talk fast. I do a lot of things fast, but I can't write fast
mm-hmm.
only because I'm very particular about what I do, and it's got to be right, and every line's
yeah.
got to be right. I go overboard, and I'm a very bad critic of myself because I did script, so the dialogue has to go right. But I see now what's happening is everybody just, they do so many books. I'm thinking, how is this possible? I just can't understand how you can get, like, 10 books a month or just keep writing, and just like that, and it's fine. It's not, but I think what's happening is a lot of times they write the book, they know lots of parts are not good, and they figure that their editor will fix it up. And you have editors writing books now rather than just editing. They're really putting it to make sense, because it doesn't sometimes.
I can say that's why I stopped freelance editing, for that exact reason. I was starting
yeah.
to ghostwrite people's books,
right,
and I was
right.
like, done with that.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've gotten calls sort of, though my website's very clear on this, but I get calls anyway about
mm-hmm.
I'm looking for someone to write my book.
Yeah.
And I explain that, A, that's not what editors do, and that's not what editors should be doing.
Right.
But it's certainly not what I do, you know, and that's often a surprise to people. But
you went, are an editor, but there are a lot of people are self-made editors now because they think they can spell,
yeah,
they can be an editor. That's not really true.
It makes my work a little harder.
It is very hard to edit a book. It's not easy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you have to really be talented to do that and have a good editor.
That's something I brought up once before. Marcia and I have done a show, because we actually did a show once on editing,
yeah.
is in,
mm-hmm.
bringing up the self-made editors. The thing is, I think there's a lot of, and I'm not knocking people who are English lit majors by any means. I'm not, you know, or somebody who's, you know, a high school teacher and wants to make some extra money, and so they're like, oh, I'm going to do editing
right.
on the side. that's not editing. That's proofreading. And that,
right.
But they're but the problem is they call themselves editors. So now there's this misconception out there, especially in the indie market,
yes.
because they don't know any
yeah.
different. They hire yeah. these editors because
right.
they used to do this all the time. And I would come back with like, well, you need to change this, and you know your transitions are really rough here in the middle
mm-hmm.
of the story, or you know you defined your main character, but now we're halfway through the book, and you're like changing who their personality is, and you just can't change them to make
right.
them do what you want.
Right.
And, you know, that's who fundamentally goes through life and all of a sudden just goes, you know what, I'm just going to be a totally different person now. I mean, just
yeah.
people don't do that. It's
yeah.
not normal.
Yeah,
and they would get mad at me, and they're like, well, you didn't find all my typos. I'm going, I wasn't looking at that. I was looking at the story flow and your... You know, like you're setting
exactly.
the world building and the setting and the pacing and the character development and, you know, all
right.
that stuff. I'm like, I could care less about your sentence structures and all that because everything else needed to be fixed first. And, but that's what they think.
Yeah.
They think that's what an editor is. They think it's someone who's proofreading. I'm going, no, that's what a proofreader's
right.
for.
No, there's proofreaders, there's copy editors, there's development editors, there's, you know, structural editors. And I see more and more posts trying to define these things for people because
mm-hmm.
there is kind of a misconception. You know, the editor has always been the behind-the-scenes assistant to the author.
Right.
So that I'm not surprised that average people don't have any real clue what an editor does because
right.
it's not
mm-hmm.
talked about. The name is not on the books often. You know, we were always meant to be behind the scenes. And now that there is this kind of opening of the whole publishing process, and authors, I hope, are realizing that they do need editors, there is a learning curve now to figure out how to find a good editor
yeah.
and how to find exactly what you need. You know, I must say, even when you and I were speaking a few years ago, there were not nearly as many freelance editors for children's books out there available as there are now, and there are a lot of really good ones out there. You know, more editors who, like me, came from some of the terrific publishing houses and who
right.
are very well trained. There are more of us out there offering freelance services. So, honestly, no children's author has the excuse that they can't find an editor who's
right,
affordable.
Right, right. No, that's right.
You know, if
yeah.
people think I may be expensive, there are plenty of others who are not as expensive. You know, it runs the gamut, and it's a personality thing. You have to make sure that you kind of fit with that editor because this is a very serious relationship, one that requires a lot of trust. And so it's a very particular kind of training.
I think so, too. And what about, how do you feel about this? Because I know this isn't probably going to be a popular statement, but it is what I think. You know, I don't encourage beta writers because I really don't care if six people start telling me what I should do with my book because I'll be crazy by then. I mean, you can't have six people read a book and say, you know, I don't think I like this or I don't like this. It's not like this. These are just people that are reading books that are other people's books. If they like one style and you're writing another, they're going, you can't change your style mm-hmm. because they're telling you this is wrong.
Yeah, that's the point. And I was running a workshop last week and this whole thing came up. And let's just be clear for our listeners, you know, beta readers are people you reach out to read your manuscript and give you feedback. Now, often in the children's community, what we'll see a lot of are critique groups, and some are tremendous and some are not, but a lot of authors really feel that the critique group can be a very valuable tool for them. But here's the thing, you're quite right, that it came up last week that a woman was saying, I'm in this great critique group, but I realized that one of my colleagues hates a certain kind of book. And so they're bringing
yeah.
that prejudice to
yeah.
the reading of her book, which happens to be kind of in that genre. And it's very important to understand that because that reader is not going to be objective then.
Right.
You know, so and they're sort of probably going to go in not really liking it to begin with, which is not helpful to the audience.
No, it is not helpful. Right, and that's the
so,
same with reviewers
yeah.
now. The same thing, because, you know, you have to be very
mm-hmm.
careful. I think what's happened now is I think that people think they need, like, 200 reviews. Well, I would really say that who's going to read 200 reviews?
No
From
one.
People that may
no
not
one.
Have read the book, even.
No,
that's a problem
it's
now.
Crazy. It's a little like how many Facebook friends do we all need?
Yes.
You know, this notion of needing that many reviews, no, it's inaccurate. Nobody reads that many. If a publisher is, if you know, what is starting to happen is publishers are looking at self-published novels and books to see if they might want to take them into the mainstream. But even there, you know, yes, they're going to look at some reviews, but they're really looking more at sales.
Right.
So, you know, having 200 reviews on a website or whatever, or on Goodreads, is not necessarily a goal that one should have. Again,
I'm really glad that you're saying this, because this is so important. Yeah, this is really important for people to hear this, because you actually are an expert. I mean, working with the companies that you work with and the authors that you work with, you actually are an expert. And this is, you know, and this is one of the problems, Virginia, and I think she's going to know when I say this, is that when we have shows like this, a lot of people might not listen to this, and that's why we have to push them more, because a lot of these people think that they know everything there is to know about writing. And they don't want to hear.
Well, that's every industry.
Instruction, because, you know, I really take notes on a lot of my shows, because there's some very good ideas from very good people. And I'm usually seeing sometimes that I realize that a lot of these people, they're not interested in anybody telling them how to do this, because they just do it.
Right.
And a lot of them don't do it in a good way.
Yeah, well, I've heard people. I just wanted to make a comment about what Marcia was saying about the reviews and this and that is, because Marcia and I offer, you know, services to the world of ink to help authors, like with, you know, coaching with marketing and stuff like that. And, you know, doing tours, but cover reveal, stuff like that. And there's been a few times where I'm dealing with a client and Marcia, you know, I'll get Marcia on the phone, I'll talk to her and, you know, kind of talk about the conversation. And we've had a few that, you know, basically they weren't unhappy with what we did, but they wanted basically like more things done than what we said we were going to do for the amount of money that we were charging this, that, whatever. Or we've talked to, like, people who've done editing, or even when I've done editing where, you know, the author's like, you just don't get it, this is a great book, whatever, da-da-da-da, like Marcia was saying, they just think they know better. And it seems like there's this idea that if people are putting money out to have services done or are contacting places who offer services, even if it's for free, that they have this idea that it's basically like paid gratification to be told that they're fabulous and not actually get honest feedback.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, no, and I don't edit, and I admit it. I don't edit because I tell people that I do not edit. I need an editor, you know, and I don't edit, you know. And Virginia edits, but she still has editors for herself. You know, that's as authors, you still need help from other people.
Sure.
You cannot do this alone.
Sure.
It doesn't work.
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but you're on to something there when I think you say sometimes when we put out money for something like this, there's an expectation that yes, what you're going to get back is a lot of praise. And you know, however, sorry to say, folks, what you're more likely to get back from a professional editor or copy editor or consultant is advice, a lot of questions, and probably the comment that you're not ready yet, and you may not know quite as much as you think you do, but I'm always impressed by people who come to me who are willing to spend the time and the money, and I say to them, you know what, by doing that and coming to work with me, you are acting very professionally about your craft and your career. And so what I will give in return is the most expert feedback that I can. But that doesn't mean it's all going to be hunky-dory. It means probably that you're going to have a heck of a lot of work to do, but at least you will now have guideposts within which to do that work. And, you know, kind of an expert opinion about here's the marketplace, here are the considerations, and here's some guidelines for how you can revise and make it strong.
And I love that you're saying that because, like, right now I'm getting ready to send my son off to college. He's a freshman this year and in college. And it's funny because, you know, I know, because I've been out of college, obviously, for a number of years. And as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about, like, my son. I'm going, you know, when we're sitting there going through his orientation, there was not one freshman, you know, that's going into college that, you know, this fall semester that's looking at the counselors and the different, you know, professors that they're meeting and looking at them going, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You're completely on crack. You know, I know better than you are. They're paying thousands of dollars to go to school to learn. So I don't understand when it comes to going to workshops, conferences, hiring a mentor, that these authors aren't understanding. You're paying us like you would be if you're going to college to get a degree for our expertise.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah. It is sort of equivalent to that. You're paying for expert feedback and guidance. And
a lot of it, which you know, a lot of the people
take with you.
They're not giving them. It's not experts, and that's one of the problems. You know, the more elaborate the website, the more bells and whistles, as they say, and all of these things that are out there, that does not mean that you are, you know, I'm sometimes thinking lately more of like back to the basics, because these other things really don't work for people. They're not working.
Right, right. Well, you know, too, like I said now, there are so many children's book editors, designers, marketers, all freelance, who are out there now offering their services. And they are experts. They have had years at publishing companies, and I think my website, I will say, I think is a good example of, there's endorsements on there from authors, from clients, there's book jackets of books that I've edited, you know, there's proof on my website that I know what I'm saying and doing. And this is something that people need to look for. Particularly if they're writing for children, you want an editor who has a background in children's books.
Yes.
That is critical. That is critical.
That is the hugest thing, because I'm so glad you said that, because when you get rejected sometimes from a publisher, unfortunately, sometimes the editors, they're not as creative as you would think that they should be, and it's just the way it is. You know, they're very good at what they do, but they might not see what you're seeing, and that sometimes is a problem for people.
Well, sure. Sure.
Maybe they just took a job and they never did children's books.
Possible. I mean, most of the editors in the children's book divisions that I know are kind of passionate about children's books. I do think, that being said, they're terribly, terribly busy and, you know, don't always share the author's vision. And if they don't share the vision, then they should reject the manuscript. And they, you know, the author doesn't want to work with an editor who doesn't share their vision.
Right.
But this is why the whole submission process is very important. It's going to take a long time. This is where I think agents are critical as well, to helping sort of siphon out the best places to submit on behalf of an author. You know, when I was still at SNS, a policy was in place where we were not looking at unsolicited manuscripts, which is manuscripts that came in without an agent. Whether that's still the policy, I'm not sure, but I would suspect so.
Occasionally,
but,
I think some of them now are seeing people. You know, I think they are taking people without an agent, some of them.
Usually it's because I met an assistant editor from Random House at a conference for SCBWI.
Oh, sure. That's different.
She gave me a specific little, like, sticker she had that you put on your envelope when you mailed it in, so they knew. And then I know some houses, at a certain time in the year, they'll open up for, like, 6 weeks to unsolicited just to give people that opportunity. But, you know, and I always tell
which
people
is great.
I always tell people when it comes to the guidelines, though, because they're like, oh, well, you know, I have a few author friends who are like, well, I just didn't, and, you know, I know what their guidelines said, but, you know, I just felt better about seeing my submission this way. And then they got a rejection.
Terrible.
I'm going, you do realize this is a test? I'm like, the guidelines are there. I said, it's a test. It's
it
a
is,
test
and you just
if
failed
you
the first
are
test.
Serious about working with these people. It's like going to an interview.
Yep.
I said, that's exactly what this is. Yep. It's a test. And
but years ago, what we used to do
is
put the agent submission on a box, let's just say. But see, now what happens is you're doing it through email. It's very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never did that before. It was always
there for a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have very specific submission guidelines. They're there for a reason. And if I don't get the submission within that format that I've requested, I won't look at it.
Yeah.
And because you're right, this is part of a test of how professional are you and how seriously are you taking this process. Because this, you know, when you don't submit according to guidelines, you're disrespecting the person to whom you're writing. That's mm-hmm. what it is. And so if there's a disrespect for the person, for the guidelines, for the process, very few editors are going to be willing to kind of take the next step to say, well, we'll forgive it this time. You know, people are too busy for that.
Oh, they have so much going on now, yeah. And short
yeah.
staff, and a very short staff, you know. I mean, that's just what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, that you're now a board member of
Sure.
you know, book writers and illustrators. And that's really, you know,
sure.
I mentioned to you, I'm thinking of rejoining it. And I would like
okay.
you maybe to say why people, what it's, what will it do for authors and that
yeah,
they couldn't, can't do for
to.
Themselves?
Sure. This is the group we're talking about is the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, which is a mouthful, but it can be
yes.
found online at scbwi.org. And as you say, I am on the board.
Yes.
I have been kind of a friend to SCBWI for my entire career, and they've been a great friend to me. And a few years ago, I was asked to be on the board. Actually, the membership voted for new board members, and I was voted in.
Good.
And
right. That's a good
it's
thing.
An organization
That's a very good thing.
That has
yeah.
over 22,000 members worldwide,
wow.
but it is specifically geared to help children's book writers and illustrators really at all levels of their career. And it's, I mean, yeah, everybody's going to have their horror stories maybe of a meeting
yeah.
that went wrong
right.
or whatever. But overall, I mean, this is a group that offers so much fantastic support and information and guidance. They don't just run conferences, and you don't have to go to all the conferences. You know, it's broken into 80 regions around the world. Every region has an advisor. And this is a unpaid position, and usually it's a writer who's struggling just as much as you are,
mm-hmm.
who has offered and volunteered their time to kind of keep the organization going so that there can be meetings, there can be critique groups, there can be workshops, conferences, that sort of thing. But where it's really valuable, I think, is, of course, for new authors and illustrators, that's first, where, you know, just even the conversation we're having today, the information that we're sharing is often the kind of information that will get shared at an SCBWI meeting, that sort of thing, just sort of guidelines and, you know, best practices. And through the website, if you become a member, there is something called the Essential Guide to Publishing for Children, and it's a downloadable PDF. And it's a fantastic resource. It's a resource organization, really. And then for authors and illustrators who have been published, often they will be asked to come speak at the conferences. But even beyond that, this is where I'm excited about offering kind of workshops and opportunities to share information that published authors and illustrators need, like about what it means to be a hybrid author. And what the opportunities there are for authors and what it means to, what are the choices one has to make if one is thinking about self-publishing and or traditionally publishing. You know, what if I need to leave my agent? What if it's not working? How do I do that? You know, there are opportunities for information and guidelines for authors and illustrators who are established in their careers. What happens if my editor at one house leaves? You know, what happens if my books go out of print? What do I do? You know, there's...
Well, which is happening a lot to a lot of people now.
Yes, it is. And so as you move along in your career, the organization can be very valuable at different stages, and you kind of have to make it what you want. out of that organization. But it's also a great way to connect with people, a great way to connect with other authors and other illustrators, create critique groups, connect with editors, connect with agents. And to your earlier point, very often if an editor is with a house or an agent where they don't accept unsolicited submissions, no, it's for editors, yes, if you meet an editor at a conference, that is when the editor will say, because I met you at this conference, you can submit to me. And that's a huge opening.
Oh, yeah, that's huge.
For authors and illustrators.
Well, I must say, I'm excited to hear that SCBWI is now doing more on the hybrid and the self-publishing.
Yeah.
Because yeah.
I haven't renewed my membership. Because I used to be a member, and I haven't renewed my membership in 2.5 years. And I was debating about it.
I hope you both will.
I am actually going to do that because I do know, you know, how you work, and I, you know, we watch what you've done, and you know that you're, this could make a very big difference for people joining that group.
Right. When I was new, I loved it, and I really valued it. But 2.5 years ago, ever since my book was published. And I was doing more and started getting more, I guess I hate to say it, but more of a, not that I'm a big name, but, you know, more of a name behind me in the children's market.
Right.
I started realizing, well, I'm paying this, you know, my yearly dues because it's not cheap to join, just so our listeners know. It's not cheap, but it is worth it. I really feel it's worth it when I first started out. And I had done the
$80
children's
Yeah, $80 is not a lot of money compared to what people pay to get things really not done. I mean, a lot of people, they spend it on other things that are not as valuable.
Right. But see, I got to put my career where I wasn't seen because I was more in the indie market with what I was doing at that time. SCBWI at the time was still very into the traditional side, so I didn't see the point in keeping my membership.
But there has been a shift,
and that's what I'm glad to hear.
You know, the board has heard that loud and clear, and I am just one of a handful of people who are now often speaking about hybrid publishing, self-publishing, digital opportunities, and now you'll see that, and it depends on the region. Now, at the national conferences in New York and L.A., there's always speakers on this subject now. At the regional conferences, that's up to the regional advisor to kind of determine what their membership and what their region wants and isn't. I've been doing webinars with groups. Harold Underdown.
This is great. This is great.
Doing more Harold Underdown.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is very
and
great that you're doing this because this does make a difference.
About, you know, publishing options, that kind of thing. And I mean, look at the Spark Award, which is new, and hopefully that will get bigger, but that's something we established this past year to honor self-published books, non-traditionally published books, as long as there's a print edition.
I'm happy to hear that. I really am happy to hear that because this does make a difference, a huge difference, matters.
What I would say, that time at my illustrator, Kevin Scott Collier's, we actually met through SCBWI because he lives out in Michigan. I'm in Utah. And that's how we met. And we both decided to go indie route with our careers. And so, you know, we ended up teaming up to do my picture book, Babysitting Sugar Paw, as an indie book, him illustrating it. And he's actually working on my second book. But I've known quite a few because I know Rick Walden's was I don't know if he's a member anymore because he has Parkinson's and he's not doing as much as he used to, but he was really a big advocate of them. But I do know Harold Underdown. Because I've been a part of, you know, his stuff and some of the things that he does on the side with the Purple Crayon and stuff like that. So I'm glad to hear that expanding because you know, I've thought about coming back. Because I've reconnected with some of the people I've met.
I haven't even talked to you about that, Virginia, but I have too. And that was interesting when we found out that you were doing this now. That's why I'm happy about it, and I will join again because I do feel that you have the voice that they need.
They
need a voice like you.
And I'm happy to do it. You know, also being on the board as a freelancer. It's been interesting to be able to kind of represent freelancers as well, which so many authors and illustrators are. But, you know, not to oversell it, but just as a community resource, it's so valuable. And you know, I know romance writers have a group and mystery
writers. Oh my God, they have a mill.
Authors who are desperate for a community like SCBWI, which does not exist for adult authors.
And that was the biggest reason why I've thought about coming back to the group was because I remembered, because, you know, they have their member, because you can go onto the website as a non-member, but you don't have access to the member stuff. And I remember, and I'm sure they haven't gotten rid of this, they have in the member area where you can actually contact, like they have like attorneys you can contact to like submit, you know, if you get contracts and you have questions about. Because I'm in the process right now with one of the novels I'm working on. I have a couple of people who are, you know, publishers who are interested in it. And I'm trying to decide, do I want to go indie route? Do I want to go traditional route with it? Do I want to go medium press, small press? Because none of the big guys like me yet, unfortunately. And, you know, but I'm going to go, like, I really probably should get back involved because that is so, I mean, when you, like you're saying, I mean, you can't be an expert on everything. It's just, it's impossible. And to have a community like that where you can meet other experts and turn to them and ask those questions about contracts or say, you know, hey, you know, what do you think of this small press? I've read some stuff. They look okay to me, but I'm not quite sure if they're the right fit for me. You know, I had a friend who did that. She went to small press, and she was excited to get published. You know, she was debut author, and now she's on her third book with them. She's going, maybe they're not the right match for me.
Well, see, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I probably, if I did send to some of the bigger publishers now, it might happen for me. But I, you know what, I've done it. I'm doing it myself. I don't care anymore. I'm happy with the way things are. But I do think that I will join again because I do think you need a group, and I think it's really important that people have somewhere to go and somebody to ask questions to, rather than just going on the internet and going blind into something where they don't know.
That's it. And, you know, in this essential guide, there are lists and lists of kind of freelance editors that have been vetted.
That's great.
And that SCBWI kind of basically endorses designers, marketers, you know, those resources. And I think you're right. I think if you are going independent, that's not a problem for the SCBWI community. And, in fact, the LinkedIn SCBWI sort of page or whatever you call it is very active. A lot of questions come up. A lot of rush to answer. Facebook as well. So
I think it's a good thing. I think that needed it. That's one of the reasons that Virginia and I decided to bring back more things, you know, and where I'm going to, you know, this is something I also think is really good. Some people think I'm crazy, but I do. I've listened to many webinars on it, and I do like Pinterest. And for children's books, I think it's one of the best places to be.
Sure. Absolutely.
You're
and
there.
You know,
you're
I
there.
Think I'm all over it.
I know you are. I know that. I know. Well, so are we. I know. You have to be.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a great way to generate business. It's a great way to generate community. I think authors and illustrators who may not be comfortable necessarily with Twitter or LinkedIn or something like that or Pinterest, you know, there's a way for you to follow those of us who are more active in the social network. And by following us and just sort of eavesdropping, if you will, in a digital way, you'll learn a lot. You know, you can just follow people on Twitter. You don't need to engage with them necessarily.
Right.
But that way you'll have access, or follow Dryden Books on the Facebook page, because we post information, we post observations, we kind of try to sort of wade through all the chaos to put out there for people accurate, helpful information.
Yeah, I think it's really important.
That's what we need right now. Yeah, exactly.
And here's a question for you, Emma, because, you know, one of the biggest things, and it goes back to, you know, people writing to Trin or writing because they want to make money because that's what they think is happening. You know, I have a lot of people when I have shows or when I'm out, you know, speaking around in Utah or, you know, teaching my class over at Dixie, one of the things they get asked is like, you know, well, you know, I'm writing in this genre and it seems like it's really, and like picture books. I know picture books is a really tough market. It's not because right now it's a tough market because there's all these great picture books coming out. It's because everybody's going back to a lot of the classics, so they're just not producing a lot of picture books. But, you know, the problem I think is even though you really like a certain genre and want to write it, and I'm not saying authors shouldn't write in a genre they prefer or that they absolutely love, but like I love horror books, and I've mentioned many times on the show, like, I'm a huge Stephen King fan. However, it doesn't mean I should write in that genre because I may not, one, have the talent for it.
Right.
And two, maybe there's a market because I am still an emerging writer or, you know, a mid-level author, which is where I really concern myself between, like, the emerging to mid-level author based on how many things I have published, that I should be looking maybe at some markets that aren't as saturated. And so what would you say would be the best thing for people to consider?
I think it's a good question, and it kind of has a couple of different answers, I think. They're all interrelated, though. I do think the danger of writing to a trend is that the trend is probably over by the time your book is eventually going to get published, you know, or it's over, you know. If you know about the trend, everybody else knows about the trend.
Right.
And publishers kind of have put books into the pipeline to suit the trends 1 and 2 years ago. So writing to trends can be dangerous. And that doesn't always, that's not always the best way to show off your best work either. That being said, you know, I've worked with a couple of clients now, actually more than a couple, many clients now, who are writing picture books and who suddenly think, or maybe not so suddenly, but they start to think, you know, I really would like to write a YA. And I say, well, then you should. You should work on a YA. And what we end up talking about is that the author doesn't know yet what they're most comfortable writing. I think there is a reason to kind of experiment with your writing to figure out where you are not just most comfortable, but where you're most passionate, where your best voice is. At a workshop recently that I was leading, we knew this woman was writing picture books, but then I gave everybody a writing exercise where they had no time to think, just write.
Right.
And her voice that came out in that writing exercise was so pitch-perfect middle grade that we all kind of leapt on her and said, you've got to be writing middle grade. And it scares the heck out of her. But that's where her voice is. And hopefully, you know, and that's the beauty of experimenting. That's the beauty of you have to following writing prompts and just experimenting and expanding your writing just for yourself. You don't have to show it to anybody.
Right.
I
do. I've done that in Virginia. No, I mean, I've done children's books. I've done I've done a nonfiction book, and my Sala book actually, you know, that does really well. I mean, it really does because the Holocaust is something people go looking for, you know, and it's at the age level that she's speaking when she was in the camp. She was, you know, 12 years old, 13, you know, and that's the age that they teach. And then I also do screenplays, and I've done an adult novel, and I really do like to try new things. I think it really does help. When I did screenplays, it helped me to write, to see the voice of people when I did screenplays because my dialogue got better.
Sure, no question.
I think authors
need to practice writing. And here's what I always tell people. If the thought of writing a certain kind of format or genre scares you, that's probably exactly what you should try. So if you've been writing picture books and the thought of writing a novel terrifies you, you should probably try to write a novel and just sort of, you know, be in that space for a while. And vice versa. Novelists should try writing picture books or poetry. Poetry, to me, is the best.
And I do that, too. I think it's really fun. I think one of the things is you need to have fun. And I think what's happened, everybody's so worried about selling now, they're not having fun.
Yes.
So I made the decision, I'm going to do my shows, have a good time, write what I want to write. I can't keep worrying about selling. And that's why the marketing should not be number one on the agenda. And that's what happened to a lot of authors. It's number one.
And I think, Emma, you hit it so true, too, about, you know, finding your author's voice because, you know, there's a voice of a book and then there's the voice of an author. And it's funny you mention that because I'm a huge Jim Butcher fan. I've read every single Dresden File book that's out there. And so he has another book out there. It's called, it's a middle grade. I think YA. It's YA, not middle grade. It's YA. Something Furies. Gosh, I'm going to have to look it up right now because it's going to bug me if I don't look it up on one of my audiobooks so I can see, guys, and tell you what it is.
Well, you know, but you know, I think that people,
cordon.
You're right. I think they should try something. I, you know, when I was doing screenplays, and I still consider that I did a horror film. I thought I'd never write one, and then I did. And you know, so I think you're right. Experimenting.
You did the script, but what I was going to say is with Jim Butcher, I love the voice of the Dresden Files. I love his author voice. I love the book's voice in every single book. But when I got to the Furies of Cordax that he's writing right now, or it's Cordax or Cordon, I enjoy it, and it definitely has his creativity that he has for that whole paranormal fantasy realm that he likes to write in. But I'm going, you know, you should stick to the adult genre writing in that, because I'm listening to it in the young adult book going, it's just, it's not grabbing me like the Dresden Files did by him. So I think he's stronger
in
the adult market.
You know what's interesting about that, I think that's valid, because as a reader, you know, you may not necessarily love everything that a writer writes.
Yeah.
But for a writer, it is so important and valuable for that writer to experiment. And even if he's not going to necessarily keep every reader that he had with a previous series, he may get new readers with this one.
Right.
But for his own craft, for a writer's own craft, it's got to deepen over the years, over the course of a career.
Yeah.
And I know this so clearly with illustrators, where it is essential that illustrators, because the market needs for illustration styles change.
Yes,
and
definitely.
And the market changes, and you work with it. This has happened to me many times. I've worked with illustrators for many years, and then all of a sudden, Salesforce is kind of coming back to us saying, that style isn't working anymore. What does the illustrator do if they don't have any other styles in their toolbox, you know? Illustrators are forcing themselves, and always have, to try new styles, try new palettes, try new mediums. And this is something that authors really could do as well.
Because
and
illustrations and everything on digital, it does look different. It's a very different format.
Well, I was saying, as you say that, I'm a huge James Patterson fan, and that's what James Patterson does. He writes across the the whole entire.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's ever done a horror book, and if he has, I've missed it. But
yeah, he did.
I know he does a gauntlet of styles, and I know not all of his fans like everything he does, because I don't.
Sure.
But I agree. You know, I think to challenge your, I think to hone yourself, you do have to challenge yourself constantly.
Exactly. I think that's right. Challenging ourselves within craft is great. And this is where, I mean, thinking about how SCBWI, for example, can be useful to authors who have published, because I know this is something that the board wants to pay attention to, is not losing members once they are published and feel like they've gotten everything out of SCBWI that they can get. I think where SCBWI can be very useful is that it's never too late to learn new aspects of craft.
Right. That's absolutely right.
And it's never too late to be reminded of aspects of craft. You know, so
things do change. Editing, even the way the structure of sentences are different, and there's just, you know, I'm not an editor, but I do know that there's so many different changes now that you know that the readers are different. It's very different, and especially with an e-book, you know, a lot of people say that this isn't right or the format, but you know what? When you go on a different computer, or you're on you're on your phone, or like I was looking at my blog the other day on my phone. I'm thinking, like, I go to all this trouble, I'm putting all these designs on and all these characters, and then on my phone I can't even see them. So I'm thinking, like, oh my God, you know, because it's not always that the person doesn't know what they're doing. It's you can't see it because their screen is smaller.
Yep.
It's very different, you know, and especially when books overlap on a page, you know, people are like, oh, what's wrong with that editor? It's not true. It's how it's formatted.
Sure.
It makes a big difference.
That's right, and that's where quality control often, you know, if your e-books are being published by your publisher, quality control falls under the aegis of the publisher.
Yeah.
If you're doing it yourself, though, these are very, and there are enormously terrific resources out there to learn about self-publishing design and what you have to take into consideration if you're designing a book cover, for example, or the interior of your book. You know, you have to take into account that someone may be reading on a 4-inch screen.
That's right.
Someone may
and Kindle does it. They have that.
On a screen,
when you go on, when you do a book with Kindle, and even the Create Space and Smashwords, mm-hmm. they just don't let you put, like, you just can't put anything out there. If it doesn't fit, they won't take it.
Well, that's
it
right.
It has to fit in the guidelines. And I tried all of this with my newer books, and I learned it. I don't really do my own that way because I learned it, and I go, I don't want to do this. But it is very, it's very interesting to see how they do create space because if you put a cover out there and it doesn't fit in their guidelines, that's it. You can't use it. They're not letting you.
Well, that's right. And to your point, I think what's admirable is that you looked into it, you loved it, and then you decided you didn't want to do it. And I think those are the steps everybody has to take. If you're thinking of self-publishing in any way, just as I say, there are so many great resources of information out there now. And Joel Friedman, I think is his name. But anyway, there's some great resources for people who are thinking about, you know, just to learn about what you have to think about as you're going to step up, and then make the decision, yes, I'm interested, or no, I'm not, and then proceed accordingly.
Well, I certainly hope you'll come on more often, because you know what? I really do think people need to hear this, and I just think that they really need help, and they just don't know, they don't actually know they need help, but they do need help.
No, That's true. You know, I'll tell you, I shouldn't be as busy as I am, and I've said this before, but every freelance editor I know is busy. The fact that I also kind of wear the freelance publishing consultant hat makes me even more busy because you're quite right. There are people who have tons of questions. And I feel very lucky to be able to be out there to try to help answer questions or at least help people figure out how to answer those questions.
Because they need to know, and they don't, you know, really, they really don't know where to go a lot of times.
Right.
So I am very happy that you've done this with the children's book. I mean, I will join again because that was one of the reasons that I dropped out is I just didn't think they were, you know, going in the market that I was
in,
but I think that's great.
You're not alone in that.
Okay.
And so efforts have certainly been made to try to, you know, bring you back, but also, you know, just understanding that the community is bigger than ever now among children's book writers and illustrators, and we're all kind of out there helping one another as best we can. So why not sort of be part of that to take advantage of that at whatever level is comfortable for somebody?
Yeah, I think everybody needs help. Yeah, and it's good to get
with
it.
Changes in publishing too has made those.
And that's one of the things nobody was out there before to help, and this is good. Because even when we do shows, I mean, they didn't have that. You know, I mean, I used to go to the library and sit down, and I'd, like, take 20 books, and I'd just sit there, and I would try to figure out, like, screenwriting if I wanted to learn how to do it. I taught myself everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I just wanted to know if I could do it right, and did. I got optioned and things like that, but you just don't – you're not born knowing these things. So it does take time, but you have to devote yourself to doing this.
Yeah.
And you're right, it's not about money.
It's still the Wild West out there.
It's
hard to get published. It's hard to sort of know who's legitimate, who's not, what's wrong. But, you know, I think the more we all talk about it, the more we kind of share the same end goals, the more we try to all want to be professional going out there. I mean, here's my position, and this is my soapbox, I guess. But if you're going to have your name on anything that's out there in the digital space, why wouldn't you want to make it as polished and professional as possible?
Right.
You know? And so that's
totally.
Going to take some extra time. And then it can work. It can work. But you don't want to
get You never know. Nobody knows who's going to be the next big success. You know, there is no formula.
So,
it is something that just happens,
it
hits. It hits.
Right. Yeah, and I'm saying that's such a true statement because, I know I've mentioned this before on the show, I mean, I remember when James Dashner came out, and he had three books published for Cedar Valley Fort, which is a local publisher in northern Utah, and he came down to do a school visit because he had just written the first book of the 13th Reality Series, which was recently picked up by Shadow Mountain, which is a mid-sized publisher, again, here in Utah.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm like, oh, you're coming down. Let me, you know, I'd love to come to your author visit, you know, because we'd met through Rick Walton, a mutual friend. And so, and I'm like, you know, I'll get a few authors together. We'll go out to dinner and chat. And, like, 3 years later, Maze Runner comes out. It's a New York bestseller, and I think it's with Simon & Schuster. And I'm going, who would have thought?
Right.
You know,
but
I
you never know,
just
right.
A few years ago talking to this guy, and he was working a full-time
right.
job as an accountant, writing his books on the side, and now he, you know, he's writing more books. He's, you know, hit the New York bestseller
That's
list. He's signed
right.
with Simon & Schuster. I mean, but, you know, that might not have ever happened. You know, you never know.
Right,
and
exactly.
And so, and you know, and the thing I think happens with a lot of authors is when they are in critique groups or in writing groups and they see something like that happen to one of the members, and they're like,
mm-hmm.
why them and not me? I'm like, you know, when you get the green envy, that
yeah.
makes actually the writing community not fun because,
yeah.
honestly,
oh,
I'm
so
very
hard.
Positive. Yeah, I'm like, I'm so excited that happened to James, you know, and, you know, good.
I think
it's
great when
him,
somebody
you know.
Has a success. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm like, when I see a movie
so
that's
hard.
Good, I'm like going, yay, that's really good. Or,
yeah,
yay,
like,
this is good.
Yay,
you know.
Someone did it.
yeah,
right.
because,
as
you know, it is hard. It's very hard to break through.
For the most part, yeah, for the most part, as a community, we are very supportive of one another, and I
yes.
see that every day. You are right, though, particularly if you have sort of a critique group or a region where, you know, successes are happening, but it's not happening to me, that can be devastating. That can be really debilitating, and that's where you just kind of need to, everybody needs to remember that we are a supportive group. We are sharing similar
yeah.
goals.
Oh, it's so much better than it ever was before. There's so many people that are
yeah.
out there now that never would have been out there. I mean, with self-publishing,
yeah.
it's the
yeah.
most wonderful thing that's hit the market because people can take their things out of their drawers, work them, and get them published. Not just
true.
Throw them out there,
true.
But you got to work them. You have to work them.
Right.
Well,
how to work and make sure they're worthy of being published. But
yeah. And the thing I always think of too is like, you know, no matter if you hit, you know, with a big publisher on, you know, on a big list. I mean, I was actually shocked my book. I remember telling Marcia when I sent my book off to Mom's Choice Awards. I
yeah.
jokingly said, "Yeah, this isn't going to win." And when it came back with the Silver Award, I about like fell over.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, my gosh, I actually won, and I won a silver. You know, I was like, I thought maybe I'd get honorable mention or something at max.
You
know, yeah, you
never know. I mean, nobody ever knows, and that's the thing, you know.
No, you
and,
don't.
No, and that's,
well, and that's
too,
what I'm going
to
say. I,
a reason
I think,
not to give up.
Well,
yeah.
and what I always tell people is, you know, because I have people like, you know, well, how are you doing, and are you signing a lot of books? Are you writing more books? I'm going, you know what, I just, half the time I give, because I have a whole box of books in my office, and I carry
mm-hmm.
some around with me, and Marcia does the same thing. You know,
yep.
if I see a kid, and they're like bored, and they're like, they're pregnant, parent, I'll just give them the book. I'm just like, I'd just rather have you read. I don't care
I know,
if I make money.
I know.
I'm just glad someone's reading my book.
Okay, Emma, you didn't get your website. You should give your website and so people can find you.
Sure.
They can find you on World of Ink because we have you on several of the blogs.
Sure, thank you. The name of my company is Dryden Books, and it's a very funny spelling. It's DrydenBks. And the website is drydenbooks.com, drydenbks.com.
And you are in all formats. You are on Pinterest. You are on LinkedIn. You are in Facebook. You are everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I am.
They can just Google you.
Community. It keeps me connected. And, you know, in addition to the consulting that I do with individuals, I love the social network to try to be of service to this community.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm trying to kind of read articles and stay on top of what's going on in this business and then trying to share that with people. And hopefully it will be helpful. But I think it was very helpful.
And they probably have two more members, me and Virginia. Virginia and I will be joining again.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know, you're always welcome to come on. And if there's something you really want to talk about, just let us know, you know, because we don't want to even know you're busy. You know, because you're welcome all the time. We love to do these things.
Thank you. I love it. And I guess I'll leave you all with this thought, which has come up fairly recently, which is, you know, someone was asking me kind of what's my impression of just books. What are books about for kids? And I said, you know what? Most books, whether they're picture books, middle grade, or young adult, a lot of poetry, that they're very much about a character at home, leaving home, and coming back home again, changed. And,
right.
you know, this notion of home, away, home, is, I think, a theme that runs through books for kids. Now, this is probably a theme in books for adults, too, though I don't read enough.
I think it is. I think it is. And Coming Home, yes, Coming Home is a big one, yeah.
But, you know, just if we kind of go back to that very elemental kind of journey that we're all on, you know, I think that's where some of the most...
You get an audience. I think you get an audience.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the Hallmark movies. I every Christmas I watch the same ones, and every Christmas I cry at the same ones. And they keep putting them on. And they're starting in October now.
It's that emotional core of all of us. That's, you know, because we all sort of share that same want and that same
I think
journey.
It's true. I do. I think it's true.
Yeah,
all right. Well, this has been fun, and thank you. I mean, I have like a little notes here, and no, I do feel better that you said this about, you know, for the children's books, because I do feel that we needed this badly, and I think that we don't. You know, Virginia and I both know we need to have somebody like you out there in the best interest of authors.
I appreciate that very, very much. I love what I do. It's my passion, and I'm delighted to be able to do it, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share it with you and your listeners.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you.
We're renewed. We're all renewed now. This is a good day. Thank you, Emma. Right, take care.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's good.
Do you want me to announce all the different shows again since we're toward the end of our show?
Well, we told them to do it, so I think yes.
Like,
no, all right, we have really some, you know, I think maybe one of the important things is we should just tell people where they can find all the shows so they can remember and see what we do. So they, you know, because we're all different.
The easiest way to find everything that we do at the World of Ink Network is going to two different sites. You can go to worldofinknetwork.com, which has a little radio player on the right-hand side. On
and that's a good thing. I
website.
Can't find one. I can't find it. You got to put one on mine.
That plays all the shows, that are currently live through all our podcasts, plus see all the services we offer as well. And then, of course, if you're only interested in the radio shows we do, which the World of Ink Network covers shows on books, authors, illustrators, the publishing industry, marketing, screenwriting. We have we talk about families, how-to tips. I mean, we actually cover a lot, so we're not just focused.
Yeah,
we all do
different things, right? Right.
Yeah.
We have a lot of different things.
Yeah, we're not solely focused on just the books and publishing industry and the writing part.
But Emma was great to have on because I think we needed something like this because I think that they have changed because it's a new vision, and I think it's a good thing because they needed that. You and I never talked about it. I did drop out, too, so, I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, and the industry's changed. I mean, the publishing industry has really changed. It's been going through a major shakeup, so that has a lot to do with it. But the other place where you can always catch us if you're, you know, because we have our World of Ink Network on Facebook, so if you're listening through any of our other podcasts or streaming-type venues, you can come to blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network.
Yeah,
and that lists all of our current shows, our featured show, upcoming shows. We are a featured host here at the World. We're a featured host at Blog Talk Radio as the World Ink Network. My gosh, I'm getting tongue-tied. And then also on the actual blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network page, you can find the Twitter, Facebook, Google+, iTunes links to our various and Pinterest.
Yeah.
So you can actually find our other sites there as well, which is really nice. I don't know if you've noticed that, Marcia, but it's up in our upper right-hand corner on the main page.
Yeah.
So that's basically the best way to find everything that we do. We are looking into doing more things. Marcia and I are always talking about things to help, you know, those
out there. Right, with Twitter. The Twitter is the one thing that I do want to do. When we find, you know, some people that would like to share with the shows with us, because it really is good PR for them, it would really – that, I think, is going to be good because we'll be getting and listening to other ideas from other people that are on Twitter at the time that we're running the show because they are live. You know, this is a live show.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, as listeners, we love to hear from you guys. So you can always reach out to us through Blog Talk Radio or through worldofinknetwork.com. Send us, you know, things that you would like to hear from our show, you know, like a show that you would like to hear. And even if it's not a show that, you know, myself or Marcia does, we have other hosts that may do a show like that. We're always curious to hear what you guys think because the point of us doing these shows here at Blog Talk Radio and why we became a featured hosting network is because we are trying to bring shows that listeners want to hear and that you guys can benefit from.
Right, and Fran Lewis will be back. Fran Lewis will be back in August doing some shows.
Right.
And that'll be good.
And I know,
in the summer, before you know it, it's over with. Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
I know. We're back to school in 2 weeks, so.
Really? Oh, my
yeah.
God. Really? Wow.
I have two
well, your kids were out very
early.
They were out early.
Yeah, well, we do. We start mid-August, and we get out mid we get at the end of May, and we start mid-August. So
yeah.
We get out early, and we start early. We're on the old farmer time clock for school still. is what I've realized. I'm like, because they try to figure that out, and that's what it is. We're actually on the farming season calendar, so people can get the fields planted, and, yeah, that's what it is.
Okay. Well, I'm in Chicago, so that is not the case here.
Yeah, see, I'm used to my old L.A. You get out in June, and you don't start till like, after, like, Labor Day.
I think it's great that Emma does what she does. I'm really happy about the show today because I think it's really great to see that this is going to make a change because we know it needs it.
Yes, and having guests like Emma Dryden on the show is so important to us because, like you're saying, Marsha, I mean, there's so many things out there when you go, and just because somebody has like a website that has all the bells and whistles, I mean, I can pay $500 and have our website look like that, but we don't do that because when we don't want to invest money into something.
I don't think it matters
anymore.
I mean, it really gets the heart of this is trying for
is
them to listen and learn some things that they may never learn. I do it in every show.
Yeah. But I think Emma hit it. I mean, Emma is a professional, but that was what she said. She goes, you know, her website is. It's very simple. And she's like, I think that all that matters is my background and the fact that I can put my credentials up there and you can recheck them and make sure that I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And that's really key. So having someone like Emma on, you know, to share the expertise and, you know, and to help direct people into what to look for to make sure you are hiring the right people.
And I think next Tuesday my show with Sandy Sullivan is going to be very good because she has her company's doing really well, and they are very honest. But I've had people on my show telling me that she pays, you know, the royalty. She's been great. So and she has all different genres. She remembered the first show I was on. If you were on that show, she was one of my first romance shows. My God.
Yeah.
I had like 8 people on. Okay. And
it was a crazy show.
And now she owns a publishing company and has tons of great authors. So it's going to be a fun show. So that's, you know.
Exactly, and anybody who has a small business, small publisher, indie press,
mid-size,
you know, your online, whatever. Even though the show is going to focus mostly on tips for authors or those who are in small press,
but it's good for businesses. You have to do this in business
guerrilla
now too.
Guerrilla marketing is guerrilla marketing. So even though we are going to talk mostly about the book and publishing industry of the guerrilla marketing,
it applies to so many.
It applies
so many,
to everything, and I can say this being the marketing major that I am, and I did that for almost 20 years. That's what my original background is. The information that Tom Garris and I will be talking about in that show applies to anybody.
I'm going to try to apply this with my – I do have an electronic business, which I rarely talk about, which is because I really don't – most of my efforts go into this. But the truth is I'm going to apply what to do here in my other business because it's the same thing. You just have to advertise and talk about things, and show people you know what you're talking about. I mean, we've done this for years.
Yeah.
So I've had an electronic business, and I've done it for years, but I just don't market it like I should.
Right. Well, and I've taken a lot of what I learned when I was in fashion and the marketing side of in the fashion industry. I've taken a lot of the tricks and trades that I learned there and applied it to my own self as an author. And I go to, conferences and stuff, and I'll have authors come and go, wow, I never thought of that before. I'm like, well, I can tell you where I got the idea. And when they find out, I got it from the idea from, when I worked at Fredericks of Hollywood when websites were first starting up for, retail stores, they're like, really?
Well, we did shows for over 4 years already, and what's interesting is when we first started doing shows, e-books were just barely touching. And then it went berserk. Well, because I remember people saying, when e-books become popular – and, we know the answer to that.
Yeah, and QR codes and all that other crazy stuff. I know. I mean, it's evolved and changed. So we're going to keep changing and evolving.
Yes, we are.
Well,
as you know, I do change every 5 seconds. This is one of my things. All right, and I actually am writing new characters. I just decided today I just started, I just want to do something different, you know, to go back to more of the basics, what I did, and just write. That's what I, and that's what Emma's saying is true, because you can't know exactly how you, people say they know, but when you're really writing, I think you, there are a lot of changes that your characters make, so you can't really say what, you can't really write a synopsis if you don't, if you're not finished. And see, she won't even
take that.
She's right. Yeah.
No, that's very true, and she was talking about that. It reminded me of when we had Jack Remick on our show a long time ago talking about what's the difference between a writer and an author.
Right.
And Emma restated that again today. Is a writer somebody who writes, but an author is somebody who finishes the manuscript and has a bookshelf of books. They don't all have to be published manuscripts, but they are completed books.
Right.
If you don't have that bookshelf, then you're not a true author. You're not in that professional state of mind yet.
You're
just at the writer level. And you do. You got to challenge yourself. And, you know, the honest truth is that five sentence that goes into your cover letter, it's your premise. And if you don't know what the premise is of your book,
Sometimes I actually do what she said. I actually do sit there and go, like, what is this really about?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you have to say. What is this really about? Because sometimes there's more underneath it, and you really got to get to it. And so it's really valuable when you listen to someone like Emma, who's had years and years of experience with Simon & Schuster and Random and all those places, that, you know, we're on the right track. So what we've been telling people is right. So on that note, all right, have a good week. And your show, I'll be listening to it. I need to, be there. All right, that's good.
Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern will be the What a Success Show on Guerrilla Marketing with Tom Garrison and myself.
Okay, it's
going
to be great. All right, so take care. Thank you all for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.